Live theater is an emotive experience. It has the power to lift you up and pull you down. Done well, it draws you in and it engulfs you. There is a relationship between you as a member of the audience and the cast, a relationship that is built immediately. Sometimes it's electrifying, and others, it is cold. Either way, it is palpable. Because the audience is changing, then the dynamics in the theater change each and every night. And each audience ensures each night will be a different performance. Live theater coaxes you. Sometimes it demands that those in attendance rise above the mundane and enter an experience that hopefully becomes something new for the cast and, of course, for the audience. Canadian theater companies are producing exceptional new works by Canadian writers. They continue to innovate. They're opening theaters in the far north, staging Inuit productions, rural theaters staging summer productions that reflect the places they call home. Technology is enhancing and expanding the stage. In Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, and especially Winnipeg, big, bold productions are opening to eager audiences. We invited Max Reimer, the past Artistic and Managing Director of the Vancouver Playhouse Theatre Company, to join us for a conversation that matters about the experience of live theatre and why it will never die. Why it must never die.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program for the Centre for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
Max Reimer, welcome.
Nice to be here.
Been a little while since we've seen you in Vancouver.
Yeah.
You are the live theater king in my mind anyways. What is it about live theater? It's a completely different experience. And I think that this is a time of year when that's the kind of experience we want. What happens when we go to a theater and there is a live performance? There are human beings on the stage.
Well, also, we're part of it. And that's it. There's something about a shared experience that goes to the core of what it is to be human. We have different behaviors in groups than we do individually. For example, when you hear in a theater, the silence of a poignant moment or laughter out loud, like how many times do you applaud your television set, for example?
Never.
And even laughing out loud, you might find something hilarious on television. But when you're in a shared experience, you get each other going. And there's something more impactful about that, something in our social nature. So I think that theater has the maximum impact because it's a shared experience, for number one. I used to think when I was an artistic director that my job was to put artists together with audiences in the same venue, which is the theater.
But then that suggests a separation.
Yeah, and I don't believe that was my job. After a while, I started to notice how the audiences were experiencing things together, and I believe that the job was actually put audiences in touch with each other and themselves. And that is the impact that you're looking for, that's the impact that happens. And that doesn't happen in other forms of entertainment. So it is, in my view, the ultimate performing art because you're experiencing that together. Certainly you feel it in music and concerts as well, but it's that idea that we're together in this and that it's impacting us as a group. And I believe that an audience, when it leaves a theater, is a very different audience that came into the theater.
How so?
They have experienced something together. I think also the content of theater is always about the essentials of the human experience. In each case, there's something always, elements of human understanding and human compassion.
So why is that different in live theater than it would be when I go to a movie? Because there are times when I'm watching a movie and I go, okay, there is some insightful writing and performance in that movie and I get something from that. I grow, I learn as a human being. What's different about that in a movie versus what happens on a live stage?
Yes, and what you just described for movies can also happen in television now. Some television writing is now some of the best writing we've ever experienced in any medium. But the thing about that is it's a personal experience, and it does impact one very profoundly. It can, if the writing is what it is intended to be. But it's that shared experience that brings the social into it. There's a sociology that takes place that just makes it a heightened experience in the theater.
Okay, but can't I have that when I go to a movie theater as well?
No, and you can notice it. You notice that, for example, you rarely get group behaviors like applause. It does happen. I've heard of it. People at the end of a movie will stand and applaud. It has happened. Mm-hmm. There will be outbreaks of laughter. There will be silence. All of those elements that you have in live theater, but not to the same extent. And again, it's because you're working directly with the artists and you're being presented with the art through a medium. Whereas in theater, you're in the medium. You're right there. And right. There's nothing like being live.
Well, I know sometimes when I go to a live performance, I can be looking at somebody on stage and I actually sort of think, okay, well, in an odd sort of way, I have a little bit of a relationship with you.
Yeah.
My energy, I think, is affecting yours. Am I right about that?
Oh, yeah, and the artists feel it. They know scene one, they'll come off, and they'll know whether that audience is with them and engaged. Because I don't believe what they do in and of itself is art, because it's a performing art. What they do is craft. It takes a tremendous amount of skill to do what an artist does.
So what's the difference between craft and art? Because you have to have the craft.
Yes. Craft, I think, is the blue-collar working of it, the hours and hours of crafting their material.
My daughter sort of says, when it's at that craft level, she says it's kind of like they're singing their performance, but they're not being.
Yes.
Yeah. Is she right about that?
Yes, yeah. Because when the art is, I believe, what takes place in between the audience and the artist, it's that magic, and you know when it's there. Wow. The audience does. They're silent or laughing or whatever the moment entails.
Yeah.
But the artist is also feeling it, and they know that they're riffing with that audience, and they know that they can take that audience anywhere. That audience is engaged, and I believe audiences that. As they talk about the willing suspension of belief, I think when you see an audience that is ready to go on the trip with you, there's nothing like it. And the artists come off, and they know it, scene one, that they're working with the audience that way.
So from the perspective of an artist or a performer, what is it about live theater that appeals to them that they don't get when performing in a movie?
Well, there's so much technical in both crafts, but when you get the immediate response, can you imagine doing a film? You know, there sometimes these are weeks and only the
or
stars
months,
or
yeah.
months, and they get only if you're a star, you might get access to the rushes, so you don't even know how it's being developed.
Mm-hmm.
So much of the timing, so much is in the hands of the entire team, from editing to all aspects of direction and all the creation. In theater, there's a big team as well. But what happens is that you are the front person for that team, and you get to experience every aspect, all the work of the team. You get to experience the feedback in real time.
And you're performing in harmony at once.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I guess you get to do it again tomorrow night.
That's right.
Or tomorrow afternoon and then tomorrow night.
Yes.
The challenge, I would think, though, in being in theater is how do you attract that top-line talent when the money is in movies?
Yeah. I think you just have to know that art is compelling, not just for the audiences, but for the artists themselves. There will always be people that want to do theater.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking earlier about the North, the far North.
Right.
We now have Inuit artists making a very strong push for bricks and mortar theaters to be built in Nunavut. And I think that it's about time. And it's also something that is just compelling. It's going to happen wherever we have people. So I think that the artists themselves are going to create art no matter what.
You know, when I asked you that last question, I was just thinking about the time when you brought Melissa's play here to Vancouver, this,
mm-hmm.
and Megan Fellows said, I want to be in that play. Like, what yes. an extraordinary acknowledgement of the quality of Melissa's writing.
Yes, exactly. To say great words, to be on the delivery side, is as powerful as being on the reception side.
Uh-huh.
That's why I believe that the art is actually what takes place in between. It's that magic that's been created between the artist and the audience. There are all kinds of theater philosophers that talk about the essence of theater being an actor an audience member, and an idea. And those things triangulate to create art. They're, if you get the first one, just an idea and an artist, it's a workshop. If you just have the audience and an artist and there's no real content there, it's just entertainment. But art is what happens when all three are happening in the same place.
A big part of this, of course, is the writing. And writing for theater is completely different than writing for movies.
Yeah.
So do you get a different kind of flow in the writing for theater?
Oh, yeah. I mean, having been an actor on camera.
Yeah, you've been through them all. Yeah.
They talk about picture. I mean, it's very much in the language of photography, and it's about what we see. But there's people that still talk about theater, going to hear theater. And it's about the words. And sure, now, this is going to be awfully rough on films, but the reason we all know the 50 famous lines from movies is maybe there only are 50.
You're slightly biased there.
That's cruel and unfair. But I would say theater specializes in the language. It has more time. A theater piece is typically twice as long as a normal play. And also, in the movies, of course, you have the ability to show things, and so much can be captured in a picture. In theater, things need to be described, but it's in that language that it's powerful, and that's what is also very engaging, why the audience has to come along. It's like reading a book. It's the language takes you on journeys that pictures wouldn't.
You don't have to convince me about going to live theater. I love it, but I remember the last time that I came to see you in Cambridge. I looked at the audience that was coming out of the theater on that day when I came to see you, and the common denominator with all of them was age, and it was north of 65.
Yes.
Is theater becoming relegated to an older audience because it's inaccessible to younger audiences, or is it because we're not producing theater for younger audiences? How do we, I guess roundabout way is theater sort of ghettoizing itself by focusing on older audiences?
That's the question in theater, but I can say a number of things. First of all, here's a newsflash, people are getting older. So one of the things that I have trouble with is sometimes the idea that if something is for older people, it's dying. But theater's been dying for 2,000 years, so I hope it has another 2,000 as well. When I ran Huron Country Playhouse in the early 90s, the audience was very old, and the concern was, these people aren't going to be around forever. And I would probably guess that there's only a handful of that main core audience still with us today. And yet, if you go to Huron Country Playhouse today, you will see an audience filled with new old people. So,
Younger old people. Yeah.
But to your point, what is this art form that attracts older people? I think we're seeing a couple of examples of large theaters in bricks and mortar theater. There is an array of theater going on that plays to younger audiences. It's often more sporadic. It's fractured. It's structured differently. It plays in different sizes of venues. And I think that's the future. A lot of those theater companies that have grown, the one you saw in Cambridge, for example, 15 years earlier, it was a small theater company with a budget, let's see, 1/14 the size of it today. So from those smaller companies grow, and the audiences often grow with it. There's also new stories being told. I mean, you look at on Broadway right now, there's Come From Away, the Canadian story of hospitality to Americans during 9/11. And there's also the issue of diversity, not just diversity of ideas, but of diversity of the people's stories that we're actually hearing about. If you go to Toronto, which is probably one of the most diverse cities you could find, Young People's Theater, for example, which is working with young audiences, you'll see a full array of stories and diverse stories, diverse people. So I believe that those are going to be the future theater goers, the theater writers, the theater participants of the future.
What are we doing to encourage that kind of development around Canadian playwrights and the development of that talent? Are we putting together, and I know that you don't speak for the entire industry because there isn't a single voice, but is there a sense that we can bring along that Canadian talent?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Canadian writing talent is huge. There are many writers that are well-published in the United States. I can think of Michael Healy, Norm Foster, and all others that have many, many productions running right now. So we are producing great writers. We are not as good as disseminating their work in our own country. We're not as good at getting productions seen in the larger theaters. And that is important for the writer's existence. I heard once the writers say, until we're heard from the main stages of our own theaters, we're really not making a living. We're struggling. And
because the economics of being a theater writer, actor, set designer, I'm sure you're not making a lot of money.
No. But hopefully you're making a lot of impact. Mm-hmm. And not to discount the issue that it's not a living for a great many. That's a very important issue, and it's very topical right now, very important. But in the meantime, we also want to make sure that the stories continue to be told in the array of experiences. One of the biggest issues now is giving voice to all kinds of theater artists that have not previously had voice. Like I mentioned, the artists in the North, also the Indigenous artists that are finally getting some priority within the funding bodies to be heard. So we're starting. National Arts Centre has just appointed an artistic director of the Indigenous department there. And he's from British Columbia as well. So this is a national interest, a national development, but it's so new. It's surprising, shocking, and disappointingly new. It should have been around for a lot longer.
So you talk about funding bodies, and I have to tell you that when I was younger, I used to look at a number of things that were sort of coming up through sort of like the world of theater, and I always felt like I was excluded, that I didn't fit into that artsy kind of group, like, because there was a group that sort of, to me, seemed to control what was on stage and what was considered to be sort of like in, and they controlled the funding bodies, and I went, where's the stuff that represents me? Do we need a funding system, or maybe we're moving towards this, and my question is out of date, that says, I'm going to unshackle you from what I think is art and allow you to produce art. Am I right about this?
Yes, and that is the challenge of the funding bodies. Look at it from their point of view. I mean, they have to be able to recognize what's new. I mean, think of it as an investment. And if you were investing in anything, even sure things aren't sure things.
No,
real estate.
Not. Yeah.
You know, so the council needs to invest in what it believes is emergent and new. And they have priorities. For example, Indigenous Voices right now is a priority. We want to hear more from the pens of women. There's various priorities over time. Going back some time, it used to also be making sure that there was theater activity in northern smaller communities was a higher priority. So the priorities are constantly there to try to do exactly as you say, to make sure people are included, not excluded. But it's always tough. There's great difficulty in getting heard for anyone.
Well, and of course there are successes. The company that you work for, which is
Drayton Entertainment.
Right. You've gone from this to that. What was it that allowed Drayton to do that?
Well, that's another great, great story. But the essence of it, I think that I shouldn't say the essence, the nuance, the thing that people often miss is it's in the 519 area code. In other words, it's in a rural setting. All five of the communities served by Drayton Entertainment are in rural are rural.
Oh.
And there's a great history. A dear friend of mine just passed away. You mentioned Megan Follows, her dad, Ted Follows, started the Straw Hat Players. And it was the idea that there could be people's theater, just people that were holidaying, vacationing in cottage country, and they called them the Straw Hat Players. Araby Lockhart, Ted Follows were some of the founders of this kind of movement. And Drayton Entertainment came out of that, these little opera houses and these little theaters that were found in these northern Ontario communities and middle of Ontario. And they started to try to attract audiences to see theater. And it was meant to be fairly accessible. They picked classics with easily recognized titles. But over time, some of the most amazing theater has been cultivated in this kind of environment.
Well, when I went and visited you in Cambridge, that was no little backwoods theater company. This was top of the line facility, top of the line performance. It was extraordinary.
In aggregate, the Drayton Entertainment has now topped the Shaw Festival for the number of tickets sold in a season.
The Shaw Festival.
Yes, Shaw being the number two sized theater in Ontario, second only to Stratford. So it's a huge draw, but but it's apples to oranges. It's a different kind of entertainment. And when you look at some of the exciting work that's going on, as I just mentioned on Broadway with Drowsy Chaperone followed by
Love That Play.
Come From Away.
Yeah.
I mean, these are huge pieces that are now getting world play, but there's also small pieces that are very, very interesting, and some of them are extremely hard-hitting and not light fare at all. They tend to play in urban centers, but not always.
Yeah.
And that's where they find their audience, and they also are noticed by the international community.
It's fair to say that live theater is alive and well and thriving in Canada.
Oh, yes.
Thanks, Max.
Thanks, Steve.